One of the best beach holidays I ever had was staying in the most rudimentary wooden hut. It was in a wonderful spot, though, and it was hot, so what else do you need? It's lots of people's dream to have a family holiday house somewhere along the coast, not too far away. Holiday houses these days, though, seem to have gone from humble little fibro places to much fancier affairs with all the mod cons and a price tag to match. There is, though, a collection of old beachside cabins dotted along three communities just south of Sydney in the Royal National Park. Many of them have been in the same family for generations, but over the years, the shackies have had to put up a fight to save them. A history of all this and how these people fought for heritage recognition has just won a heritage award from the National Trust of New South Wales. We'll meet the author of this history book in a moment, but first of all, let's meet Kerry McKenzie. Now, Kerry, you and your husband have got a shack at Little Gary. Tell us what it's like.
Well, it's definitely fibro. It's very humble, but it's very comfortable.
So how do you get to it and what do you see when you're there?
When I drive 20 minutes from my front door to the car park. Then we load up our wheelbarrows and take our supplies around to our shack. And when we're there, we're cocooned in a beautiful, sunny little fibro shack. And we look out over green grass and sparkling water, depending on the weather, of course. It's our sense of place. It's place we love very dearly.
And how long have you had it for, Kerry? What's the family connection?
My husband's father went down there when he was 18. He went to help with Gary Surf Club as a lifesaver. And he fell in love with the place, and eventually he had his parents come down. So they both had a shack, and my husband was actually, dare I say it, conceived down there, and that's why he's called Gary.
Oh, right.
I know, scary.
He's Big Gary.
He's Big Gary, yes he is.
It's fantastic. And you just you mentioned, Kerry, that when you get there, and it's obviously very close to where you live in Sydney, you said it's a 20-minute drive or something, but then when you get there you have to load up the wheelbarrows. That's because you can't drive right up to the place, is that right?
That is correct. Our valley is the Lucky Valley. We don't have a very long walk. The other valleys, unfortunately, have a gruesome walk.
And gruesome? What do you mean?
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, I did it the other day for the very first time, and I was absolutely gobsmacked at how disgusting the track was down to it. How they carry anything down there is beyond comprehension to me.
So it takes much longer.
Much longer,
right.
Much steeper.
Okay. The author of this history book about these shacks is Ingeborg van Teesling. The book is called Shack Life. Ingeborg, you moved to Australia from the Netherlands 12 years ago or so. How did you learn about the hidden beaches and these shacks?
My husband has a shack at Era at the bottom of that gruesome track that takes about an hour. So he took me there for the first time because you have to, when you're a new partner, that's your test. If you can hack it down there, then you're the bee's
knees. You get a tick of approval.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So he took me there before we got married, before, you know, you have
to. Just to make sure.
Absolutely, just to make sure. And I think he probably would have married somebody else if I'd just thought it was horrible. So I got to see it down there. And of course, you know, I'm from Holland. Everything is where we've all got 5 centimeters of space. And there was this enormous sense of space and history and continuity. And like Kerry says, belonging. It's people's homes, although they don't live there. It's more their home than their normal home is, I think.
Well, what is the history of these shacks, Ingeborg? Who built them?
Well, the history starts at the year 1800 when a young man called Andrew Byrne came to Australia on the Minerva. Byrne was an Irish rebel who'd fought the British, and as a consequence, his father had been hanged and his mother and 4 brothers had been sent to the States, and he was sent here. So he had a bit of what we would now call PTSD, I think, when he arrived. And about 25 years later, when there was a drought on, he got this piece of land at what is now Era. to graze his cattle. And I think that when he finally walked his cattle from Appin, which is about 50 k's up to this land, and I still think that when he stood there overlooking the ocean, seeing exactly the same thing as people are seeing now when they stand in that same spot, I think that, or at least I like to think that he felt exactly the same as we feel now, which is, I'm at home, I've arrived, this is finally, my soul can rest, or something like that. And from the
but these shacks, the shacks that are still there, now they date back, I think, to sort of the 1930s, to the Depression.
Built yeah, by the Great Depression, and a little bit even before. There were three First World War soldiers who got soldiers' blocks up the hill, and then when the Great Depression was there, there's lots of mines around.
Coal mines,
mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of out of work miners who went down the hill because they had nothing to eat. So
were these shacks the miners' permanent homes or their holiday huts?
Well, they didn't really build shacks. They sort of built shacks. They built shacks out of whatever was lying around. We have interviews in this book with people who lived there with their parents as young children in bits in shacks that consisted of palm fronds and bits of wood that they'd found, and some rocks that were lying around, and they lived there because you could fish, you could put a bit of vegetables on, and that sustained a lot of hundreds actually of people through the Great Depression. And then it became sort of your working class refuge. Lots of people came when they and during the war and after the war. Also, lots of other people, communists, artists. There's a story. Maybe we don't know whether this actually happened, but we think we do. Of Margaret Olley, the painter, dancing naked on the sand. You know, stuff like that. It was lovely.
Well, now, Ingeborg, these shacks predate the area becoming a national park.
Yes.
And it's really from the 1950s on that things got tense around them. Just summarise why.
I think that the problem became in the 1950s, it became part of the national park. And then people started to wonder whether people could actually be part of nature and history and heritage. And soon the idea came that nature was actually only what they called wildness. And that was a bit weird because that area, of course, had never been wild. Before there were white inhabitants, there were Aboriginal inhabitants. So it had always been used by human beings. But there was this idea that nature was somehow not touched by human hands. And of course, that also meant that there couldn't be people in there. And then at the start of the 1960s, we got a minister of lands, Tom Lewis, who had been working at the embassy in Washington during the Second World War. And he thought he had been looking at what the Americans did in the national parks. His idea was you couldn't have people in the park. The only thing that you could have in national parks, of course, was mining.
Yeah.
So you could have mining, but not people who took care of their places the way they'd always done for years and years and years.
So that meant that the shacks were under threat. They were going to be demolished, and there was the fight to get them saved. Yeah.
Absolutely. And we lost over time, we probably lost about 50 shacks. There's an enormous amount.
Out of how many?
Probably about 250. Mm-hmm. Stories about people coming in and seeing their shack being torn apart by helicopters or by groups of national parks and wildlife people. It was horrendous. There's people there that still wake up at night from seeing that.
Here in Life Matters, we're talking about Shack Life, which is the title of a book by Ingeborg van T. Teesling, about a few hundred odd Depression-era beachside shacks in the Royal National Park just south of Sydney that have so far survived, most of them against the odds. The book's just won a Heritage Award from the New South Wales National Trust. Now, our other guest is Kerry McKenzie. Her husband's family has had one of these shacks for some decades. Kerry, you actually lost the shack in the 1980s. It was going to be pulled down. How did you save it and get it back?
It had to be one of the most horrendous times in our family. It was like losing a member of your family. When Gary's grandparents died, they were the names on the lease. And at that time, anyone who died, their shack had to be handed in. So our shack was handed in. At that time, there were about four other shacks that were pulled down. And we arrived one weekend expecting ours to have gone, and they'd pulled all the others down, but ours was still standing. Of course, there was a sign on the door saying, you're not allowed to enter, and it was boarded up. So it took a long time for us to get it back. We actually ran into somebody who in our local fish and chip shop, who was at ERA, and he helped us write to ombudsmen and politicians to actually get our shack back. But our shack was, all the stuff had to go out of it, and it went throughout the valley, all our tables, our crockery, our knives and forks, all was distributed amongst the people in the valley. And then there was a ranger that came in one day and put an axe through our tank, and somebody said, what did you do that for? He said, so you bastards can't use it. So that's the type of mentality we had to deal with at the time, and it was extremely stressful.
Well, you shackies did end up getting a heritage listing in the 1990s. And Kerry, I think, explain to me how it works. Your family's now got a licence for the place, yeah? But it expires in 10 years?
Yes, that's correct. And
what happens then?
Well, that's right. Look, we are in a constant battle with national parks. It's never easy. It goes from one thing to another.
Well, it could be argued, as Ingeborg was suggesting, that a national park isn't the place for people to be living or to have holiday houses.
That wasn't what I was arguing, by the way.
No. It could be argued.
Can I also just say that these people have always paid rent. We are not squatters. We get a lot of people that come past and say, oh, you're squatters. We're not squatters. We've always paid a rent. We still pay a rent. And so we're not just there willy-nilly. Mm. We do have a licence, and we pay our fee.
And besides, the shack owners were there before the national park was there. So if we talk about, who's got more right to it, then that's, that's debatable. And in fact, in the 1970s, the Crown Solicitor had a look at it, and he actually said that the shack owners were the owners of their places and had absolutely the right to be there. That was information that the National Parks and Wildlife Service suppressed, and that we only found when the 2006 court case was on. And that's that's the reason why the shacks are still here, because they themselves said that we had the right to be there. Mm. So I don't know.
So Kerry, just with the licence then, as I mentioned, yours expires in 10 years' time. So there's still obviously some tension around this. What's likely to happen?
Well, we have left it. We went to mediation. We had a court case, and in the mediation it was stated that there would be a clause to say that if the government of the day approves a new licence, that's what we are hoping that will happen in 10 years' time, that the government of the day will approve an extension of the licence.
Yeah, right.
But at this point in time, the only way you can get on a licence is if somebody dies.
Right, okay. So it's, okay. It's interesting to see, there's been a long history of
angst.
Well, yes, and it's obviously continuing.
Yes, it is.
Kerry McKenzie is the owner, license holder of one of these shacks in the Royal National Park south of Sydney at Little Gary. It's been in her husband's family for years and years. And Ingeborg van Tieseling is the author of Shack Life, a history of these cabins on three beaches in the national park, and the story of how so far they've managed to stay put, most of them. The book's just won a Heritage Award from the National Trust of New South Wales. Congratulations on the award, Ingeborg, and
thank you.
And Kerry, thank you for joining us too.
You're welcome.
And hey, what's your cherished holiday spot that you'd fight to save? Is there one? Why don't you let us know on Facebook? ABCRN Life Matters is how you find us there. This is Life Matters with Amanda Smith. And coming up, finding love unexpectedly.